This message comes from NPR sponsor Progressive, and it's Name Your Price tool. Say how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show coverage options within your budget. Visit Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, y'all. This is Sam's Aunt Betty. This week, the multi-level marketing of LuLaRoe. All right, let's start the show.
You're listening to It's Been a Minute from NPR. I'm Sam Sanders. So I've noticed something. A lot of the TV I've been consuming recently, the TV that's really hooked me, all these shows have at least one thing in common. They all offer a critique, in one way or another, of capitalism. Squid Game, the most popular Netflix show ever, it is all about the lengths people will go to when they experience horrible debt and dead-end jobs. The worst of capitalism. The White Lotus and Succession, those shows mock the rich and make the case that too much money can make you an awful person.
Look, here's the thing about being rich, okay? It's like being a superhero, only better. You get to do what you want, the authorities can't really touch you, you get to wear a costume, but it's designed by Armani.
And there's this other one that I cannot stop thinking about. Lula Rich. This one is a documentary all about a multi-level marketing scheme where mostly stay-at-home moms sell really weird-looking leggings.
Beauty is in the eye of the beholder, and some people really want to wear, like, jack-o'-lanterns on their leggings, and that's, you know, that's okay.
That's Meg Connolly. She's a women's work and economic justice writer. And this week, Meg and I talked about the Amazon Prime series Lula Rich, which is all about this business, LuLaRoe. LuLaRoe convinced a lot of people to sell really loud colored tights from their homes. Until the whole thing just blew up. Meg and I talked about LuLaRoe and how the working moms that got into selling jack-o'-lantern leggings, they often went into debt in the process. And we talked about how this series, LuLaRich, it was all about how the dreams of capitalism, wealth and work-life balance, for instance, those dreams can make people fall for some pretty ridiculous schemes. To be clear here, multi-level marketing has been around for a while. LuLaRoe did not invent that. Think Amway, Mary Kay, etc. But some data indicates that MLMs are actually growing during the pandemic. We should start with just defining what an MLM is, right? It means multi-level marketing, which is not technically a pyramid scheme, but I want you to define both and tell us where LuLaRoe sat within that.
Okay, so a pyramid scheme is you're just selling the opportunity to make money. If 10 people give me, you know, $10, and then 10 people give you $10, and then eventually it like forms an actual pyramid shape. And the people at the top make a lot of money because they get a cut of each of, you know, the $10 contributions. And then the people at the bottom, you know, make nothing because eventually you run out of people who are willing to
be recruited,
have the opportunity to make money, right?
Yeah.
So an MLM is not technically a pyramid scheme, but it operates with the same, it's the same business model. It's just with a product. And so with LuLaRoe, the product was leggings, but the way that you made money was selling people on the opportunity to sell those leggings. And so, you know, they talk about this in the documentary LuLaRich, but most people were making most of their bonuses, like the majority of their compensation from LuLaRoe, on the people that they signed, the bonuses they got from signing people to sell LuLaRoe.
And this is the thing that was really interesting and the thing that seemed pretty insidious. So, like, they're telling you, you can sell these tights. Everyone wants to buy them. But to start up, you need to give us, like, $5,000. And then from that $5,000, the person who recruited you gets a cut. But then you get a box of, like, hundreds of pairs of leggings, and you just got to sell, right?
And you had to get in line to invest because so many people wanted to buy the inventory.
But you would be on a waiting list anywhere from 90 to 100 days. So we literally had these women waiting for our calls. These are people spending anywhere from $5,000 to $10,000 for some leggings.
And, you know, a lot of these women were selling breast milk to be able to afford.
And they were kind of urged by folks in LuLaRoe to consider doing that.
Right. Like, just take out a second mortgage, sell your breast milk. But the thing is like, that's what we're told in America, right? Like, it costs money to make money. And if you are a stay-at-home mom, let me tell you, like, nobody's, like, willing to, like, give you capital to, like, start a business. Like, yeah, you're going to have to sell your breast milk, right? And so they did that, and then they waited and waited for the leggings. And, you know, in the documentary, there's one woman who talks about painting a bedroom in her house because she's going to set that up as her, like, LuLaRoe store. And it kind of broke my heart because probably the last time she did that was, like, for a nursery for her kids.
I cleaned out a room in the house, and I painted it.
I moved all the stuff out of my one son's bedroom. I turned our nursery into a LuLaRoe room.
Care work is work. You know, like, we need wages for housework, but of course we don't have that in America. And so the way that she was able to try and make her house productive in a way that was, like, economically recognized in our country was by bringing the leggings.
The symbol is, I mean, like, it's just really troubling symbolism.
Right. I work, you know, I have been a stay-at-home mom. Yeah. I think all moms are working moms, but now I'm, like, a traditionally working mom. A lot of these women in the MLM and in the documentary, they seemed to really want to do primarily the work of caring for their children. But because we don't recognize that as actual work and we don't pay for it, they were trying to find a way to do both. Now, that's not all the women. A lot of them did want careers and hadn't, you know, had the opportunity or, so I think that you have a spectrum of needs.
So, yeah. Who was the typical LuLaRoe seller?
The typical LuLaRoe seller was white, tended to be middle class. Mm-hmm. They were active online. They were active on social media.
And a lot of them were stay-at-home moms, right?
A lot of them were stay-at-home moms. The person who started LuLaRoe, the couple, they are Mormon. And so a lot of the people initially involved in LuLaRoe were Mormon.
So, I mean, perhaps the most compelling part of this series, LuLaRich, is the character study of the two founders of LuLaRoe. They're quite something. Tell our listeners who they are.
They are quite something. So I actually knew them. I grew up in Southern California in the same originally congregation and then kind of in the same religious community as Deanne Stidham and Mark Stidham. I actually went to one of Deanne's, she did dress parties when I was little.
I would invite all my friends and I'd do it at my house, show some dresses and people come shop, buy it and go.
And, you know, it was the 90s, so it's, like, these, like, velvet-topped dresses with, like, kind of poofy skirts. Like, I wanted one. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, you pair that with some, like, white little socks and black Mary Janes, and, like, you are in business.
There you go.
But my mom was like, no way, we're not buying anything from this woman. Like, my mom did not feel comfortable.
Yeah.
She said, you know, even as a child, she'd be like, she's always trying to sell you something.
She called me out of the blue, wanted to buy a skirt. I said, you know, this is a really great opportunity for you to make money.
This is what LuLaRoe and what she was so good at. And they kind of alluded to this in the show. They realized that stay-at-home moms were this untapped resource.
If you want to create incredible wealth, identify an underutilized resource. And you know what? There is an underutilized resource of stay-at-home moms. And they have
people weren't valuing their work. People weren't seeing them. They weren't able to have 9-to-5s because of the kids. And so this was a workforce of folks that were really qualified and can do lots of things because doing parenthood is a lot of different jobs at once. And they said, oh, let's get them, right? And so the whole PR pitch of LuLaRoe is, this is not sinister. This isn't a scam. We're giving opportunities to a certain kind of woman that never gets them. And that kind of message becomes so successful. I mean, LuLaRoe expands almost exponentially. And by the middle of the last decade, it's kind of everywhere, huh?
Yeah. So it really does go bonkers. And these women have bought into it, like literally and figuratively. And they're selling each other on it because when you are in an oppressive system, often you're the victim, but you're also the victimizer, right? Mm. And so there's a part in the documentary where they're showing one of these cruises they go on. Like, they start going on cruises and the moms are having like this big white mom dance party, which is, you know, about as awkward as you can imagine. there's one part, like in the corner of the screen, you see a mom holding her baby and dancing at the dance party. Oh. And again, I'm trying to think in America of a work environment where you could go to a conference and break down with a baby, right? I mean, that is
the dream. That is a work-life balance dream. And like LuLaRoe was offering that.
Yeah, or at least pretending to, right?
Yeah. Coming up, the downfall of LuLaRoe. And who is actually at the bottom of the pyramid?
Across America, history is often recorded on small markers. You've probably seen them on the sides of roads, in front of buildings, in the middle of nowhere. NPR's Laura Sullivan spent a year investigating thousands of markers and found a distorted version of America's history, but also curiosities, humor, and joy. Listen to the new episode of The Sunday Story on the Up First podcast from NPR.
Taylor Swift has dropped a new album. She is the biggest pop star in the world, and everything she does makes news.
I gasped. I was like, oh my God, I've been there, and you can identify with it.
For a breakdown of Taylor Swift and her new album, The Tortured Poets Department, listen to the Pop Culture Happy Hour podcast from NPR.
If you've never donated to the NPR network before, that's okay. Public radio is available to everyone for free. But we do rely on listener support from those who are able to give. So join the community of supporters for Public Media Giving Days, coming up on May 1st and 2nd. Please give at donate.npr.org, and thank you.
There are a lot of issues on voters' minds right now. Six big ones could help decide the election. Guns, reproductive rights, immigration, the economy, healthcare, and the wars overseas. On the Consider This podcast from NPR, we will unpack the debates on these issues and what's at stake. You can listen to NPR's Consider This wherever you get your podcasts.
The Indicator from Planet Money is all in on video games. Not just because they're a fun hobby. Video games are one of the fastest-growing businesses worldwide, worth more than the film and music industries combined.
We're seeing some games that are really taking, $500 million to make.
We're taking a week-long look at the video game industry. Listen to the Indicator from Planet Money podcast on NPR.
By the end, LuLaRoe is falling apart. They kind of grow too quickly, and the leggings get worse and crazier as time goes on. They end up arriving at people's doors moldy and smelly and wet. There are too many people selling too many tights. The markets are saturated. The company begins to get sued. It really falls apart kind of astronomically. How epic was that fall of LuLaRoe? Because it seemed like, from me watching, it was insane.
I remember watching LuLaRoe disintegrate in real time. You know, it's like happening around 2017. And what's interesting is a lot of MLMs start falling apart because the market has become too saturated and people are no longer buying in. Like, there are not enough people to form like the next bottom layer of the pyramid, right? Mm. LuLaRoe starts falling apart before that. LuLaRoe starts falling apart because their leggings start falling apart.
Like, literally, like, tearing on people's legs.
Like, literally start tearing. So that's interesting because that reflects a development that they don't talk about at all in the documentary, which is, like, the actual bottom of any MLM pyramid, the manufacturing.
Yeah. And those weren't white middle-class moms.
These are not white middle-class moms. We're not talking about the bottom of that pyramid because we don't want to, because acknowledging that would mean acknowledging a lot of other things about America.
Yeah.
But the leggings start disintegrating. And, you know, study after study shows that when the quality of product becomes worse, that directly corresponds to a worsening of conditions for the people making the product.
Mm. And then the company briefly institutes this return policy. Then they're like, sorry, can't do it anymore because everyone wanted to send all the tights back.
Because everybody's trying to get their money back. And then people start talking about class action lawsuits.
So then, in spite of all of this crazy, LuLaRoe does not go away. They're sued by, I think, Washington State, among others. People leave the company in droves. The reputation of the leggings themselves is in the garbage. But LuLaRoe still exists. What is it about America and our culture that keeps us so wedded to MLMs?
You know, MLMs are not going to go away until we make America less pyramid-shaped.
And I want to stop you there and have you define what you mean when you say that America's pyramid-shaped.
We can talk about how disgusting pyramid schemes are, and we can, you know, laugh at white suburban moms for falling for the LuLaRoe legging thing all we want, but they fall for it because it looks like the market sphere, right? Like, it looks like America. America has a very narrow top that the only way you can get to it is by
just hustling, like hustle culture, right?
Like hustling, yes, yeah, totally. Like, selling people on opportunity is the American dream. Mm. Like, that's literally what the American dream does. And, you know, they didn't discuss it in Lula Rich. You know, the cultural commentary in Lula Rich was basically like, these women, they're overeducated and they're in the home and they have nothing to do, but they feel like they have to stay in the home. And so then this MLM comes in and they think it's a good opportunity, but they're idiots. Really, they should, you know, leave the home and do some real work. But the work of the home has dignity and importance, and we build our careers on the underpaid labor of people within our homes, right? Like, we say, like, the work of the home is not liberating, does not fulfill us. And then we hire women to work in our homes for way too little money, often women of color. And then we build on top of their labor. Mm. Like, that is...
That's a pyramid scheme when you talk about it like that.
It's a pyramid scheme!
I mean, so I am hearing you say that MLMs are so appealing because a lot of the very central ideas to American capitalism are MLM-esque and pull on the same heartstrings.
Absolutely.
If that is the case, and I'm guessing you think that should change, there just has to be a level of truth-telling about our economy and what it is. I think that one of the positive developments of the pandemic was, as everyone had to really exist in this strange space, we had time to just reconsider holistically our relationship to work. And a lot of folks said to themselves, I'm working too much for not enough money and I'm tired. But I wonder what sitting with our relationship to work even more would feel like and look like. And if we could begin to address some of these things that you speak of, you know, this idea that there are all of these kind of pyramids that we exist in, and there are folks on top and there are folks on the bottom.
You're just absolutely right. You know, when the pandemic happened, some of us are at home, not all of us, but as some of us were home, I hoped we would start to understand that the home sphere and the market sphere are not separate. Like, it's not two spheres. It's really warp and weft, right? Mm. And we're all woven together. Mm. What ended up happening was we took that concept of separate spheres and we brought it like into the house with us with our remote work. And then we just let it split the house in half. I mean, like, millions of women had to drop out of the workforce, right? Because we weren't willing to rethink the way that we've structured the home and the economy as existing apart from one another.
Well, I will say, I'm excited about our current moment because a lot of people seem to be ready to question a lot of things, and that's where change starts. So I hope.
That's true. That's true.
Meg, will you stick around and play a game with me?
Yeah, absolutely.
Up next, we play a game of Who Said That? Stick around.
Over the past couple decades, the U.S. has lost about a third of its newspapers, taking thousands of local journalists off their beat. A functioning democracy and functioning local journalism go hand in hand. We're trying to do our part, and that's why we need you to do your part. Make sure that the NPR network stays strong by supporting us at donate.npr.org. And thank you.
In this country, more than two local newspapers are closing down each week. As news deserts grow, public radio is a lifeline for staying informed. Keep that service strong with a donation to the NPR network at donate.npr.org. And thank you.
The Indicator from Planet Money is a daily podcast that helps you make sense of what's happening in the economy. And video games are a growing slice of that economy, with billions of people around the world identifying as gamers. That's why we're dedicating a week-long series to the growing business of video games. Listen to the Indicator for Planet Money podcast on NPR.
Every time you drive your car, have a package delivered, or get on a plane, you're polluting the climate. But it doesn't have to be that way.
Nature is powerful. Why don't we use it to our advantage?
Meet the people working on cleaner ways to get around on Here and Now Anytime from NPR and WBUR. Transportation Climate Solutions on Here and Now Anytime, wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Bullseye Podcast is, according to one journalist, the, quote, kind of show people listen to in a more perfect world. So make your world more perfect. Every week, Bullseye puts the pop in culture, interviewing brilliant authors, musicians, actors, and novelists to keep you on your pop culture target. Listen to the Bullseye Podcast, only from NPR and Maximum Fun.
We are back. You're listening to It's Been a Minute from NPR. I'm Sam Sanders, and we're about to play my favorite game, Who Said That? I've got two amazing contestants here this week, and they both happen to know each other. They're friends, even, which makes it even more fun for the competition. Both of you, tell us who you are.
Okay, so I'm Meg Conley. I'm a writer, and I'm so happy to be here, and I'm so nervous because I haven't been paying enough attention this week.
Okay.
To the culture.
You'll be fine.
And I am Janon Graham Russell, and I also have not been paying attention. I like to think that I'm, you know, pop culture savvy, but I am also ready to be embarrassed today. So let's go for it.
So when you are not playing Who Said That with me, what's your day job, Janon?
So my day job is I'm a Harvard PhD candidate and also a Mormon Studies fellow at the University of Utah.
So you two are friends. You kind of operate in the same spheres of conversation, talking about Mormonism and family and all those good things. I want to say for this game, leave your friendship and your connection behind. The two of you are mortal enemies. You are competing
I'm
against the other.
That can only be one.
So this game is really simple. I share a quote from the week of news, and you got to tell me who said it. I'll give you a lot of clues, but there are no buzzers and there are no timers. Just yell out the answer whenever you have it. Okay?
Okay.
Gotcha.
Let's do it. Here's the first quote. It came from a particular social media platform this week. Just name the platform. The quote is, "Hello, literally everyone."
Twitter.
Facebook.
Yeah.
I'm so happy.
It was Twitter.
Oh, no.
So that tweet came from the official Twitter account this week.
Yes.
Because when Facebook and Instagram and WhatsApp went down for several hours on Monday, Twitter was like, oh, we're still here.
And did you see all the responses beneath it? It was like so dystopian because it was like McDonald's, like every brand just kind of like riffing each other with Twitter. It was so upsetting. I was like, this is the bad place.
Yeah, yeah. How did y'all survive the great shutdown on Monday when you really couldn't post to Insta or like gossip on WhatsApp?
Oh, it was great. I mean, the clouds opened up, the sun shined through. Like, I just felt like, you know, we talk about, you know, just, I was at peace. It was a peaceful time.
I will say, I was surprised by how much it affected me. Like, I didn't mind Facebook being out. I don't really use Facebook at all.
Yeah.
But Instagram, I probably find myself refreshing and looking every half hour. So
oh,
it was
really?
A hard day. What's crazy, though, with this whole thing, so, like, Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp, it's all part of the same company. And in spite of, you know, us joking about not being able to post selfies and such, you know, WhatsApp in many parts of the world is a primary mm-hmm. means of communication. So it was a
vital.
Good deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so anyway, Facebook said that the outage was due to changes in its infrastructure that coordinates traffic between its data centers. All that to say, they eventually had to send a team of people to a physical data center in Santa Clara, California, to reset the server computers. Y'all, they had to turn it off and then turn it back on again.
I love how you say that as like it was like middle school gossip. Like, did you hear what she said? Like, that's I just. I'm just loving this conversation because that's what happened. And it's wild.
I'm like
totally
imagining
wild.
Mark Zuckerberg blowing in the video game cartridge
yeah.
and then trying again.
I kept like, you know, the scene in Jurassic Park where they have to like go get past the raptors to turn it
yeah.
off and turn it back on again, like the switchboard or whatever. Like, I kept imagining that.
Mr. Hammond, I think we're back in business.
Yeah, it might as well be Jurassic Park. It's about that hostile.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Who got that point?
Me. It's my only point, I'm sure, so I'm claiming it.
All right, this one's totally crazy. Totally, totally crazy. I think you're aware that I donated my kidney this summer, right? Yell it out. Say something.
It's the bad art friend.
Oh. Yes, it's the bad art friend. Did y'all both see this story?
Okay, could you bear to read it? I got like two paragraphs in and then I had to stop.
Janan, did you read it?
I did not. I saw the headline and I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to go live my life today.
That's good. That was the right, that was the right choice. It's like,
well, because they pay me to study stupid. I read the whole thing and it's all up in the discourse. So that quote about the kidney donation, that comes from Dawn Dorland. She was one of two main characters in this story this week from the New York Times Magazine called Who is the Bad Art Friend? And long story short, this piece takes part in this writer's community. A lot of writers who write together and write apart and are navigating the literary world. One of the writers, Dawn Dorland, she gave a kidney to a stranger and then began to post about it on Facebook. She even shared the letter she would send to the stranger who got her kidney. And a lot of other writers that knew her thought it seemed pretty self-centered and obnoxious. Eventually, another writer uses part of the language of that kidney letter in a short story that seems to be mocking a fictitious Dawn Dorland. Eventually, they both sue each other. Group chats are unveiled during the course of these court proceedings, and Dawn Dorland ends up seeing all the other writers kind of talking smack about her in the group chain. It's all a mess.
Drama.
Let me tell you, though, I was popping the popcorn. The story was good. At first, I was like, why is the New York Times covering this? And then I was like, man, I'm so glad the New York Times is covering this. Well, and like what's crazy is as soon as I finished reading the piece, I was like, oh, this has to be a movie. And I was like, who plays who in the movie?
I think one of them has to be Jennifer Lawrence. I see her as this very dramatic character and just really, you know, just getting really into that role.
I totally like that. Who else could y'all see? I could see Rosamund Pike as a kidney donor.
Totally.
Just a really uptight, very uptight woman.
Yeah. I, just the thought of this, like, becoming a movie has, like, sent me into such a spiral. This discourse has lasted so much longer than I expected. If it became a movie and it, like, there was more discourse around it, I'm not sure I'd, like, that might be the end.
Well, I tell you what, I will watch the movie, I'll watch the miniseries, I'll watch the documentary, and I hope they find some way to put Nicole Kidman in it, because Nicole Kidman.
Yes.
Why not?
Yeah, that'd be good.
All right, last quote for all the marbles. This one, this one's rough. Guess which celebrity said this? Famous singer. Here we go. Quote, to clear things up, we pooped once together, and we laughed and said never again. But he will hang out with me if I'm poop emojiing, because we soulmates, and I legit miss him when I'm away from him. And we pee together, obvi.
Okay.
is there a lifeline that we can get with this one?
I will name the title of her most famous song.
Okay.
Which is All About That Bass.
Oh, Meghan Trainor.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Meghan Trainor.
Yes.
Okay. Wow.
Did y'all see this story? Either of you?
I did not see this. How did I miss this?
This is epic. So that tweet came from Meghan Trainor on October 6th, and she was addressing some things that she had said on Nicole Byer's podcast, Why Won't You Date Me? She revealed to Nicole Byer, and now to the whole world, that in the home that she shares with her husband, Daryl Sabara, they have, wait for it, side-by-side toilets.
No. Mm-mm.
Yes.
Oh, no. Mm-mm. Oh, no, boo-boo, no. if we're on the topic of social media shutdown, like, this is, like, that's one of those times that Instagram, like, social media like across the board should have shut it down. Just shut it down.
Just shut it down. Like this should have like broke the algorithm and crashed all of the servers forever.
Like what?
Yeah, they have side by side toilets.
Like the people like building the house, like installing the toilet, like were they like, what is happening?
I just love imagining the first call to a contractor.
Yes.
Megan and her husband Daryl are like, no. We want them together. What? No, we want them together. Like, how far? 4 feet apart, but, like, together. And same
yeah,
room?
Like...
Yeah, together.
Like, are they close enough so that you can, like, hold hands? Are they, like, how do you decide the distance between two side-by-side toilets? Like, what
do
what
they
do you,
share one toilet paper roll, or are there two?
Yeah, exactly.
A lot of questions.
Lots of questions.
I'm into radical transparency in marriage, but, like, that is a step... That is something else.
How much would y'all... Okay. I guess, what would it take, money, gifts, service, what would it take to get y'all to agree with having a side-by-side toilet with your partner?
Would we have to actually use it? I mean, I guess you could build it and give me something, but I never...
Is there a bidet? Like, what kind of toilets are we talking about?
My colleague Janae says that she would need her partner to donate their kidney to recruit such a thing. Honestly, okay.
I'm not even sure then. I'm going to be honest. Yeah. I'm the bad art friend because I would probably just never be able to use the restroom. Like, I would become severely ill.
Yeah, and, like, just staring at each other. Like, do you stare? Oh, like, what God. Do you look at? Like,
oh, that's true, though. Side-by-side's better than two toilets facing each other, probably.
My editor just said it's like the poop bathroom version of Indecent Proposal.
Oh my gosh. No. But I just
who plays who in the side-by-side toilet movie? That's the question.
Oh.
Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'm going to go to the official scorekeepers for a tally. Do we have a winner? I think I know, but I always want to check and make sure. Meg, I think it was you.
Dreams came true today. I'm not gonna lie. I'm gonna be able to like look my family in the face, and you know, I'm bringing the trophy home. They're gonna be really proud of me. I'm really excited.
Wow. Janan, how are you feeling right now? Are you okay?
You know what? I couldn't have lost to a better person. So you know.
Oh, look at Susan Lucci. So humble, so kind, so gracious.
Hey, it's the Mormon. It's the Mormon in me. So.
Thanks again to Meg Conley and Janan Graham Russell.
Now it's time to end the show as we always do. Every week, listeners share the best thing that happened to them all week. We encourage folks to brag, and they do. Let's hear a few of those submissions.
Hi, Sam. This is Kim in Cincinnati, and the best thing that happened to me this week is that my 16-year-old daughter, Lena, just had her last chemo treatment. She was diagnosed in December of 2020 and has endured a really brutal regimen of chemo and radiation. She still has a ways to go in her recovery, but watching her walk out of the hospital and ring the bell for her last treatment is the best part of our whole family's week.
Hi, Sam. This is Rachel from Pittsburgh.
Hi, Sam.
My name is Adina, and I'm from Brooklyn, New York.
Megan from Lexington, Kentucky.
Hey, Sam. This is Lee from Encinitas.
I was calling to tell you about the best part of my week, which was when my 21-month-old son, who has decided to enter the terrible twos 6 months early, came up to me, gave me a big hug, patted me on the back, and said, "Mine."
And this week, for the first time in 579 days, I got to go back to work in a Broadway theater. I work in the wardrobe department, and I've been unemployed since March 4th, 2020. It was so exciting to be back, to see everyone behind their masks, and to feel the energy that moves through.
And the best thing that happened to me this week just happened, and that is that the Kentucky Wildcats just beat the Florida Gators at home for the first time since 1986, which is the year before I was born, so it's the first time that's happened in my lifetime. Go Cats! Woo!
I am organizing my second ever event involving local makers, and I got 30 vendors lined up in about 48 hours, and I didn't realize I had that ability or those amazing connections.
I have to share this really sweet moment that happened yesterday. I was out with a friend. We were getting a drink at a little bar that's down the street, and she had left to use the restroom, and I was practicing a dance piece that I'm learning. I'm part of a contemporary dance company, and I have rehearsal today, and I had pulled up the video, and I was just kind of reviewing it in my mind, and while I was doing that, this woman comes up to me and just says, I've been watching you, and I love what you're doing, and it's so beautiful, and how do I see you perform? And it just made my day. you don't get compliments like that every day. So, you know, it's a reminder to just say something nice to a stranger. It can really make a difference.
I love the show. Keep up the good work.
Thank you. Bye.
Love your show. Bye.
Thanks again to all those listeners you heard there. Kim, Rachel, Katie, Adina, Megan, and Lee. Listeners, don't forget you can share the best part of your week at any point throughout any week. We still love to hear from you. Just record yourself and then send us a voice memo via email. SamSanders@NPR.org. That's SamSanders@NPR.org. All right, this week's episode of It's Been a Minute was produced by Janae West, Liam McBain, Anjali Sastry, and Andrea Gutierrez. Our intern is Nathan Pugh. Welcome, Nathan. Our fearless editor is Jordana Hochman, and our big boss is NPR's senior VP of programming, Anya Grundman. All right, listeners, till next time, be good to yourselves. I'm Sam Sanders. We'll talk soon.
For the seventh year on the Code Switch podcast, conversations about race and identity go way beyond the day's headlines. Because we know what's part of every person is part of every story. We're bringing that perspective with new episodes every week. Listen on the Code Switch podcast from NPR.
You care about what's happening in the world. Let State of the World from NPR keep you informed. Each day, we transport you to a different point on the globe and introduce you to the people living world events. We don't just tell you world news, we take you there. And you can make this journey while you're doing the dishes or driving your car. State of the World podcast from NPR. Vital international stories every day.
NPR's editorial independence and integrity is non-negotiable. It's the reason why so many listen to 1A's Friday News Roundup. You'll get analysis and insight from the world's best correspondents. Listen to 1A's Friday News Roundup, only from NPR.